The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are continuing with our college football coverage, and it is time to go under the helmet with Husker great, three-time national champ, Jason Peter. First of all, Jason, Happy New Year, and I have to share with all of our listeners, you know it's going to be a really good show when you're flipping through the channel and on ESPN, you come to ESPN Classic, and they are replaying the 95 Orange Bowl double nickel number 55. How fantastic. That was your first national championship, correct?
Yeah, that was the first one against Miami, and it's kind of unusual. You know, there's this big movement out here in Lincoln that ESPN is anti-Nebraska, and they never show the Nebraska games, and they never promote Nebraska sports. And not that I buy into that at all. You know, there's a lot of college football teams that have done tremendous things throughout the years, so you got to kind of spread the wealth. But, yeah, it's great. It was great when you sent me that message saying, hey, you guys are on ESPN Classic. So anytime, I guess, you get to relive the glory days. This way I get to tell my wife and I get to say, show her. See, I'm not lying to you. I actually played, and there were fans in the stands, and people were screaming and yelling, and yeah, we won a championship.
And, you know, some of the players who I went with Miami was Warren Sapp. I didn't realize he was on that particular team.
Warren Sapp, Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis, yeah, I saw him.
You know, who else was on that team was The Rock, Dwayne Johnson,
okay.
the movie star now. He was a backup defensive lineman on that team. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of your typical Miami teams, just loaded with talent. But the ironic thing about that whole game was we were playing a Miami team in Miami at their home stadium, the Orange Bowl, and we were kind of the big Midwest team coming, and everyone thought that the heat would affect us and our wind would affect us. And there are so many pictures and paintings of, you know, Warren Sapp bent over on one knee and the rest of those Miami defenders just gasping for air. And in the background, you see the kind of the Nebraska players all just standing in the huddle. And, you know, their wind isn't affecting them at all. I mean, I remember the preparation that Coach Osborne had for us going down there. He said, the one thing I can guarantee is that we will not be out of shape for this game. And it was a big factor in the game, I think.
You know, here we are just a few days before the BCS championship game with Auburn and Oregon. And, you know, when it is this time of year, I mean, Jason, do you and your buddies, do you guys pick up the phone and kind of reflect and just kind of recount so many of those incredible memories and stories? And, you know, I have to share with our listeners, if you're just tuning in, I mean, Jason wasn't just part of one national championship. He won three. I mean, what an incredible dynasty. And then, you know, it was so cool to watch on ESPN Classic to see, you know, Tom Osborne on the sideline and just his demeanor. I mean, he certainly was not gregarious in it by any means. I mean, just very much to himself, cool, calculated, and just kind of quiet, wasn't he?
That's the way he always was. He never wanted anything to change for one game compared to a game earlier in the season. He treated each game the same, and it was the biggest game because it was the next game, and that was a lot to do with the preparation. He wanted to make sure that the week leading up to a national championship game was no different than the week leading up to the Kansas game or the Kansas State game. Everything was a routine. He didn't want to break out of that routine. And I think the same probably goes for the way that he coached. The only time I ever saw him kind of a different coach on the sideline was in 1997, and that would be the my last game as well as Coach Osborne's last game when he walked away from coaching. And we were in the second half, and we were playing Tennessee and Peyton Manning. And there was a time when we were on the sidelines. The defense was getting ready to go in, and Coach Osborne was kind of walking down, and he's kind of beelining right for me, and he's got this look in his eye. And he came, and he's just not quite yelling, but I would say the highest tone and the most force and the kind of anger in his voice, saying, go out there, get the ball back. We need a three and out, something, but you got to get off the field and you guys got to make something happen. And that was the most intense that I ever saw him. And I think it was because he knew there was, it was a turning point in the game. We had just scored. I think we were up by 10, and he knew that if we got the ball back again, we were able to go up by 17, that it would probably put the game out of hand. And it turned out to be just that. I think we went out, we had a three and out, and the offense scored, and Tennessee never really had a chance after that.
Reliving some great memories with Jason Peter talking about his Nebraska Huskers. And Jason, I hate to bring this up, you know, just this past week we're hearing about some of the PR blunders with Bo Pelini. What happened at the Holiday Bowl? He told a young sailor, you know, he'd have an opportunity to call a play, and he breaks the promise to a Navy serviceman. What's going on? Can you kind of straighten things out?
Somebody needs to offer Bo a class, I think, in PR and how to be a head coach. And this is kind of what you knew you were getting. He was a guy that was rough around the edges, and he's not going to say the right thing all the time. But you would hope, I think, as a Nebraska fan, that after year three and living through some of the blunders that he's already had up to this point, that you would start to kind of smooth out those rough edges. Well, the most recent one, like you mentioned, was down at the Holiday Bowl. He made a promise to a Navy petty officer that he would be able to call a play in the Holiday Bowl, during the Holiday Bowl. And I know coaches say lots of things like that, and whether or not it was an honest gift that he was giving this guy, or if it was just something to make everybody laugh at the event that they were at. I don't know exactly the situation. I wasn't there. I didn't see the way that, or hear the way that he said it. But I think where he's gotten himself in the trouble here is in response to why the kid did not get a chance to call a play. And that was because he said that it was a joke, and it was always a joke. And I think if he had come out and said, hey, look, the game was a tight game, and in fact we were behind and we were trying to get back, and as you know, every play in college football is an important play, and you know, we just don't have the luxury of letting anybody call a play. So you know, whether the kid got the call play or not, I just think that he probably handled it wrong by saying it was a joke. I think he could have said, well, I forgot about, you know, that because I was so caught up in the game. But when you come out and you say it was a joke and that I never planned on you know, letting the kid call a play, I think a lot of people now are looking at you, especially when you're talking about the military nowadays. I mean, these guys are over there. And
absolutely.
And we've got our own, you know, children dying over there trying to protect our freedom. And I just don't think you make light of any situation that has to do with the military.
Okay, the other question I got to talk to you about, since we've not talked here in a couple of weeks, what about in terms of the Miami job? Was this just a flirtation with the Miami job, or was he really trying to get out of Lincoln, Nebraska?
Yeah, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, nothing's been said about that. I'm sure there's a little anger built up towards the school chancellor, Harvey Perlman, when he came out following that game against Texas A&M,
right?
And
when he
kind of scalded Bo Pelini publicly and said, "This isn't something that we're going to tolerate." And I'm sure, as a head coach, all these guys have egos. I mean, I don't care what coach you pinpoint or what coach you say doesn't, they all do. And especially nowadays, when you're paying them the kind of money that they're getting paid, they all kind of walk around like they're big men on campus. And they're the guy that is the highest paid employee at the school. And let's face it, in colleges today, and especially the colleges that we talk about, kind of football is king of the castle. And when you're the head guy, when you're the CEO of that company, you kind of feel like you have the most power. And for somebody to come out then and scold them, whether he deserved it or not, and I believe he did. I think sometimes these guys need to be put back in their place, and they need to be reminded that, hey, they're just coaching football. You're not out there, you're not curing cancer, you're not doing it, you're coaching football, and you're getting paid a lot of money to do it. So it's not the I think the most difficult thing in the world to have some civilization or some normalcy on the sideline, where you're not acting like a caveman and yelling and screaming and telling referees where they can go shove it. And it's unprofessional. I don't care who you are, what type of business you are, you don't want your leader acting like that. And so maybe he did flirt with the idea of the Miami thing. Maybe it was just a way of getting back at Harvey Perlman. I don't know exactly. Maybe it was just he saw it as an opportunity where, prior to the Miami rumor coming out, all of the rumors and the talk was focused around Taylor Martinez and whether or not he was going to transfer after the whole debacle at Texas A&M and the screaming and yelling on the sidelines. So maybe he saw it as, hey, if people want to talk about me and going to Miami rather than my quarterback and whether or not he's transferring, then let them do that, because it's no sweat off of my back. But the problem is when you give these rumors legs, it just becomes, a bigger distraction. And you have players on the team, whether you tell them you're staying or going or whatever. These kids nowadays, they read the blogs. They read what people are saying. And fans are very intertwined now with the players. And you know how 17, 18, 19-year-old kids are. They tend to believe what they read in the paper or what they hear on the radio or see on the TV. So it's not as easy as standing up there in front of your kids and saying, hey, it doesn't matter what they say, I'm not going to Miami. I mean, we've seen coaches, how many coaches have we seen in the last 3-4 years stand up at news conferences and say, I won't be the next head coach at Alabama, or, I'm not leaving the Atlanta Falcons, or, Petrino, Saban, you name it, all these guys, they claim, they stake their allegiance to the school that they're at, and the next day they're gone.
We're quickly running out of time, JP. Just, we're a couple of days before the BCS championship game. Just give us your thoughts, your rundown quickly on Auburn, Oregon. Two teams that certainly sport unstoppable offenses. I got a feel for these defensive coordinators because they got a lot of questions to address. High-powered offenses.
Hey, I just hope we get a game like the Rose Bowl.
Go Frogs.
What a game. But with this BCS championship game, it's funny, the games where you expect, I think, the high scoring and the explosion, usually they end up being the defensive battles and being a 10-7 game. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case when you talk about these two schools. Certainly explosive and high-tempoed and fast-paced. And, for Oregon, their team, that they love to spread it out. And I think when people think Oregon, sometimes they think, well, because of that spread and that high tempo and they're passing it. They're a run-based offense. They just like to spread everything out, and they're option for the most part. But the thing where I think they can hurt Auburn, and the thing that maybe has been the Achilles heel of Auburn's football team, has been their pass defense. And there's going to be some opportunities there for Oregon to move the ball down the field, throwing the ball, and it's just going to be a matter of whether or not Auburn can do a great job of containing the quarterback and getting after and the pass and shutting down the Michael James. And it all starts with shutting down the run. Because when you make a team one-dimensional, it's the easiest way to attack. If they have success throwing the ball and running the ball, forget about it. It's going to be a long day. But, whether or not Cam Newton can overcome the so-called Heisman jinx, there have been few guys that have been able to do it, but certainly a lot of turmoil still surrounding him. Now his father says he's going to be at the game, and as long as it's something that people are still talking about, it still has the potential to be a distraction. And you don't know where these kids' minds are. Is he already thinking about whether he's going to go to the NFL or not? Is he going to stay? What's the deal? I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, and you see it with Blaine Gabbert this past week. The day after he announces he's leaving to the NFL, he signs with CAA and Tom Condon and those guys. So obviously, that just didn't happen in one night. Those guys had been grooming him and talking to him for the past month, 2 months, 3 months, on whether or not he was going to leave. And you got to wonder, is that going on with Cam Newton? I'm sure it is.
Okay, Jason, as we sign off, tell us, who's your pick, Auburn or Oregon? You going for the underdog?
I'm going to go with Oregon. I like the fast-paced offense. You know, Scott Frost, former quarterback at Nebraska, wide receiver coach out at Oregon. I think they're fast. I think they can fly around on both sides of the ball. Obviously, the offense gets most of the recognition, but I think they can fly around on defense as well. And I just, you almost just got to go with your gut feeling on this one, and I like Oregon.
Okay, Jason, we'll look forward to talking some TCU football next week, because as you said, that Rose Bowl, it was historic. It was truly something special. We'll catch up with you next week, okay?
Absolutely. Take care.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at eradiosports.com.